And all this negativity that's in this town sucks. And I've been around, and when Jim Rice was booed, I've been around with Yastrzemski booed, and it stinks. It makes the greatest town, greatest city in the world lousy.
This is Entitled Town.
The Patriots is success through great leadership. And that's Robert Kraft. Robert is an example of the American dream. Started with very little and built a great business empire.
The New England Patriots solidifying their team as an NFL dynasty.
He's known for his leadership of the Patriots and of the NFL. And I think admired everywhere.
No more is Bob Kraft admired than in the studios of Kraft Dynasty LLC. Hello, friends. My name is Mike Irons. I am here with some of the usual suspects. Shaq is here. Scartelli is here. Brother John is here. We have a new guest this week, someone who is, I'll introduce him now. He's Twitter Patrick Pass. And Pass, you want to explain to everybody that you're not the former fullback / running back, 3-time Super Bowl winner?
Well, actually, that was going to be my breaking news for you guys, exclusive, that I am not, in fact, Patrick Pass. seems a lot of people made that mistake initially, but it seems less and less as I've got a little more involved in Twitter. So you guys got that scoop, and thanks for having me on.
Let me play Albert Breer. I can confirm that you are, in fact, not Patrick Pass, the football player.
No, I'm not. I liked him, though. He's a good player.
Sure was, when he's not grabbing his hamstring and screaming on the floor, on the grass. But that was Rupert Murdoch we played. That was the opening from episode 7 of The Dynasty as we're all listening through gritted teeth. Pass, what's your impressions? Are you watching The Dynasty? And B, if you are, what are your impressions thus far?
Okay, so I am watching it, and I was actually fairly excited to watch it because I like the book. I like the book a lot, actually. The first two episodes I thought were pretty good because they brought back for me a lot of memories, you know, a lot of the clips. I thought the first two episodes, which were released on the same night, were pretty fair. They didn't, you know, they didn't have an agenda, but like I'm sure you all feel the subsequent episodes, what are we up to now, 8, have, you know, been clearly agenda driven. And I didn't get that whole Rupert Murdoch thing at all. I mean, why? Like, what was he doing on there? He has absolutely nothing to do with the Patriots. Why is he commenting?
It was shoehorned in. It really felt shoehorned in.
Well,
really?
Roy Cohn was unavailable.
At what point did you think this was becoming a Kraft hagiography pass?
Well, it was before. I would say even before the Hernandez episode, they were trying to say how tough he was and almost unfair and unfeeling towards the players, which I don't think is true at all. You know, obviously they've all said it's a very tough program to work in, but almost from episode 3 on, and the way they skipped over the Super Bowls too, that told me, you know, right there that they had an agenda. They wanted to tell something other than what was happening on the field, which I do understand to some extent. You know, I mean, I suppose you want to keep it interesting for people who are not Patriots fans, but it is a show about football. That should be the focus, and it hasn't been since episode 2, in my opinion, except for maybe a few clips here and there I enjoyed. But beyond that, you know, it seemed like from episode 3 on, it became very agenda-driven.
Hey, Shaq, Bob Kraft is a leader. He's a philanthropist. He's obviously a kind and gentle lover, as proven Orchids of Asia can attest to that. I think only you and I, our levels of angst and teeth gnashing over this are more than anyone else's. I don't want to speak for you. I find it disgusting. If you can't say, admit that is slanted towards the Kraft, and I would go far to say it's a hit piece on Kraft, as you all know, then you have an agenda. They've been trotting out Matthew Hamacek as the Bob Kraft Memorial Human Shield over the past week, doing his best Baghdad Bob impression. My disgust level is 10 out of 10. Where are you?
I'm like at a
85 out of 10. It's absolutely disgusting. And it almost is like, I mean, I understand it's Apple TV, so it's a reality show type of thing, but the way I think that Bill Belichick has handled things so well. And if it were me, because I'm petty, I would have been all over television and newspapers saying what a bunch of bullshit this is. But he's so far has handled it with the utmost amount of his class, not responding to this, and that nice parting address in what was it, the Globe or the Herald, taking out that ad. It, you know, we as a culture in the United States continue to make the mistake that people with a lot of money have accomplished something of value. And
ooh, John just perked up hearing that.
You know, and that makes it a positive reflection. The Crafts, we only see the glimpses through what they've engineered. And this documentary is part of that. It's disgusting. And I mean, just watching, I was watching episode 3 again. And then he talks about the great accomplishment of finally making the Super Bowl in 2001. Like, do you not pay attention to your own team?
You made a previous Super Bowl with the other Hall of Fame coach whose ass you drove out of town.
Oh, my goodness. So not only that, you didn't mention that you got Belichick, which enabled you to bring that 6-10 team to the Super Bowl the following year. Instead, you were focused on tearing down and blasting Parcells, look, Parcells to the Patriots Hall of Fame. I've given up. That train is up the station. I'm in there now. It's he was right. So to me, this entire documentary is just it's food for the haters. And now that's all they're going to do. Now they're going to focus on this documentary.
Agreed, John. Do you want to piggyback on multimillionaires' egos and sense of self-worth that Shaq alluded to?
Now, I want to go to the Rupert Murdoch piece, because when I'm first hearing that for the first time, I'm convinced he's going to say Bill Belichick is this great leader.
There's great leadership. I did the same thing.
And it's like, wait, did he really say Bob Kraft? And it reminded me of the scene in Fletch where they're talking about that guy. It's like the group of Rotarians and the cops are all kind of fanning the room, and it ends with a hug a cop. You know, doesn't it feel good to hug a cop? Well, Bob Kraft is like that guy that just like needs that hug, right? And the fact that, you know, when Fletch stands up and takes credit for, you know, the guy that they're honoring, you know, it's like that's what that felt like to me. It's like Bob, you know, Rupert Murdoch and like Bob Kraft. that's not who we're really talking about here, right? No, it's really Bob Kraft, the man who started with nothing and married somebody super wealthy and worked for her dad and, you know, took over the box factory and, you know, look at him now, right? You know,
leveraged buyout at the box factory.
Yeah, leveraged buyout, exactly, right? Even better. So the boys from Bain Capital, I'm sure, had a hand in that one. So the you know, it's so weird to me. I'm getting past, like, you know, those stages of grieving with Belichick gone. I've gotten past some of the anger. I'm not all the way through it, but now I'm into like this acceptance, but I'm landing in the space of weird. This entire dynasty show is weird. It is absolutely this sort of hagiography for Bob Kraft in the Hall of Fame. The animus they have toward Bill Belichick that's come out, you know, kind of in some of the coverage and in the show itself. I just can't wrap my head around it. Belichick was remarkably successful, generated remarkable value for that franchise, and to treat him like this, and I'll just keep going back to when NFL Films says, basically, mm-hmm. this thing is disgusting and we want nothing to do with it. Don't even ask us about this, right? You know, we really do have the documentary developed by the guy that did the Amanda Knox documentary, who's going to parlay this into the Taylor Swift, you know, debut song, right, in one of the episodes, and then go on to like the next Hollywood thing. He's covering it, you know, as Pat said, he's covering it in a sort of Hollywood-ish way, not in a football way. And maybe that is appealing for like casuals who have Apple TV. But, you know, for those of us who lived those 20 years, who want it celebrated properly, it is pretty infuriating.
Here's an example of the leadership and the tone setting that Bob Kraft's stewardship has had over the franchise. This is a personal favorite of mine. It's two-time Super Bowl champion Sony Michel speaking with James White on his podcast about his experience about being drafted by the Patriots and the treatment he received from Kraft Productions LLC and how he was valued.
The crazy thing about it, this is so Patriots right here. So I get drafted first round, you know, and I'm watching every other first round, Calvin Ridley get drafted first round. Them boys send a jet. Every team send them boys a jet. Everybody got a jet. Not lying. They put me on a Southwest flight.
First class. Ain't no first class. No Southwest.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes.
Southwest Group D, Scartelli. Just, he's celebrities. They're just like one of us.
Want to get away.
Scartsy, where are you with the Kraft hagiography?
That's the only description that actually fits. I'm stuck after episode 4. I haven't gone on to the Do You Have Any Castles episode 5, and then the Bill New caller about Hernandez episode 6.
We'll get into the Hernandez one for sure.
And you know, did episode 7 and episode 8 come out yet? Because I know that the media seems to get them a week first so that they can, you know, dribble out information. So I think, you know, we talked about the Orchids of Asia a few minutes past. I think that will be the bellwether as to how much of a hagiography this is going to be. If that escapes mention in the next 2 episodes, that'll let you know. If Robert's so vain that he's going to make sure that doesn't get any airtime in his documentary.
Dean Wormer knows the percent chance that that's going to be mentioned in the last 2 episodes.
It was covered, just like Super Bowls, just like the two, 38 and 39.
Yeah. How does that say about you as a director? Like, you must be a crappy director. I have no faith in yourself that you can't cover the dynasty games.
TMZification, right?
Yes.
Pash, you were saying? Go ahead.
Yeah, so on that last point, you know, if they want to cover the scandals, it's just so glaring that they skip over the Kraft one, you know?
Yeah, they'll cover the scandals, the quote-unquote Bill scandals, for sure.
But actually, what I wanted to say was that I have a theory about this whole documentary, and tell me what you guys think. But so I've always gotten the impression that the media side of things. So ultimately, I'm not sparing Bob. It's his team. But haven't you always thought that Jonathan was more involved with the media side of things? You know, the radio.
He's absolutely involved with it.
Well, I see his fingerprints on this. I mean, Bob signed off on it, but it's almost like I think he was the one who truly hated Bill. And you can almost see his fingerprints on. Plus, it's like a tome to his father, you know, like, you know, who he's constantly seeking approval from. I almost see more of Jonathan in this agenda than anyone else. And that's just my opinion.
I would agree with that. John, you and I talked about this a little bit, kind of in a different vein. You know, our dad is a peer of Bob Kraft, early 80s. Would you and I ever put Dad in front of a camera in a $3,000 suit? Hell no.
Oh God. Oh, we did talk. We had a good laugh about this concept, and I do see, the Kraft is slipping. He is. I think the way you put it was he's not a reliable narrator, right? I think a fair way to put it. And he, I don't know if I'd call it elder abuse at this point, but every time he's on camera, it's cringeworthy, and you just can't trust what he's saying. But I think past your point on Jonathan being kind of behind all this and ready to step in and take it over. I mean, I just, there's been nothing in his entire life that you would point to that he's accomplished on his own 2 feet without being in the shadow of his dad. Why do you think that he could do this? I mean, I think, Mike, you've talked about the Kraft being a sports radio listener, a fan of the shows. And I think that comes through in this documentary. If any of the color and we all agree that the Kraft Dynasty LLC is writing the check. When Kraft Dynasty, you don't mess with billionaires, right? There's millionaires don't get in fights with billionaires. And when Kraft Dynasty LLC is writing the check, this documentarian wants to have a career. He seems like a young guy. You know, he wants to have a career going beyond this. You don't piss off the guys who can bring Rupert Murdoch into the film, right? You know, you want to talk how a billionaire would drop his balls on the table is, oh yeah, yeah, no, we're totally going to be hands off. You have all this footage. You can do whatever you want. You know, but one idea is, you know, we could have Rupert Murdoch be a part of this. Why don't I call him up? You know, I think that basically tells you everything you need to know about where you stand in the pecking order and how this documentary is going to go. And from there you're off and you've got this hagiography for the Hall of Fame with Bill Belichick cast as the villain.
1,000%. So Matt Hamacek was able to bring in Howard Bryant, Princess Mittens, Nora Princiotti, and hit piece enthusiast Bob Holler. Crafty Bob throws his nuts on the table. Hey, here's Rupert Murdoch, one of the richest people in the world. Scott Telly, go ahead.
Oh, sure. And Hamacek clearly knows from what he shot that, you know, Bill was not going to be a willing subject. He's not going to.
Why should he?
Oh, exactly. Bill had his eyes open. This was a guy who's, you know, very good at scouting. And he knew that he would, he knew the score was going to be, you know, Kraft was considered himself a unequal partner in the dynasty, that he does not receive enough credit, and that he was going to make sure that the story got told in his favor. It could be said that the dynasty book was very, very, very Kraft heavy when it came to the storyline as well. But the difference between the book and the documentary is it's becoming, you know, glaring as the episodes pile up.
Yeah, he wasn't getting access through Belichick. He was getting it through the Crafts. Mm-hmm. Pass, I wanted to piggyback on what you said about Jonathan Kraft running the team. This is Michael Lombardi, a favorite at this address. John and I talk about what Lombardi says in his podcast all the time. This is Mike Lombardi talking about Jonathan Kraft.
I think that's fairly clear. Jonathan Kraft is running the team. I think that's fairly clear. You know, they didn't name anybody. They're not going to name a general manager. It's going to be that I have plausible deniability, you know, and they're going to run everything. Look, this is part of what's happened. And again, this is not a knock. This is just what you have to, if you want your team back, is what the Krafts obviously wanted. They want their team back. They want to run their team. And they have every right to run their team. They own the team. They paid the money to have the team. So I think Jonathan and Robin Glazer, his legal counsel, I think those are the two who are in on every coaching interviews that they've had go through there. So, which is fine. And Elliott will do a really good job for them. And they're going to have to be very good offensively and defensively in terms of the scheme. This is a different operation. We are now in collaboration mode here in New England, as opposed to one man running the team. Jonathan.
Collaboration, ring the bell. Pass, I agree with you with Jonathan. I think Jonathan is the man behind the curtain. He's still tending to that emergency at the cardboard box factory. That's the reason why he wasn't at Mayo's introductory press conference. I don't want to put words in your mouth, the distaste of ownership and how they've treated Bill Belichick after everything, how Elliott Wolf talked, it's clear they didn't have any restrictions placed on that. I don't feel like they kissed the ring enough. That goes for Mayo as well as Elliott Wolf. Has what the Kraft family has done, how the new administration has been acting, has that affected how you feel about the team? Because it certainly has for me, just speaking for myself. How about you?
Well, 100%. You know, people recently have been on Twitter, the ones who's, you know, just fans no matter what, they're happy Bill's gone. They come at me sometimes and say, you know, everything you say is negative, which, you know, may be true, but only for the last 2 or 3 months.
Right.
Before that, you wouldn't find a bigger Patriots fan than me. You know, I've had season tickets for over 25 years. I usually go to one or two away games a year. I went to Dallas this year. I also went to Germany this year. I've been to 2 Super Bowls. I buy God knows how much in Patriots stuff over the years. You know, so I've been nothing but positive about, you know, because they deserved it. I mean, it was the most successful run in the history of sports. And I don't understand moving on from it because of essentially one unsuccessful year. And people say, well, it's been more than one unsuccessful year. And not really. You know, it's been one terrible year this year, which, you know, you can put a lot of reasons on it. And essentially two 500 years and one playoff year since Brady left. And so how do I feel? I don't even know. You know,
I agree.
I want to root for the team. This is something I've done every fall for my entire life. I still have my tickets, which I'm keeping. But I really don't know how I'll feel sitting in the stands if the Patriots make a good play, if I'll be, you know, excited or just sort of ambivalent or what. You know, I guess I'll cross that bridge, but I know I haven't been able to get into the draft like I usually do. I'm not like,
and they have the third pick. I think that speaks volumes.
I know it. And I'm somewhat of a draft nick. I've always, you know, bought all the magazines and subscribed to the, you know, Our Lads and things like that.
And you and Larry Johnson like equals.
Yeah, and this year, you know, I'm not saying I haven't followed at all, but, you know, I like who they're going to pick at three. I don't care. You know, I really don't. You know, I don't have an opinion because I just don't. Maybe it'll come back. Maybe it'll come back once you know, some time passes. But right now, I just honestly don't care what they do. I could comment on it if I think it's good or bad, but I really don't feel strongly, you know, like they got to do this, they got to do that. They need to fix this position. They need to, I don't. It's always ruined my fanship, to be honest.
I do like that we're recording on Tuesday. Is today Tuesday? Yeah, today's Tuesday.
Yep.
We're recording on Tuesday evening. And I love that, to me, it seems like they're being played by Calvin Ridley to up his offers from the Jaguars. But I will say, Shaq, that the approach that Elliot Wolf and Jonathan and Robin Glazer have taken so far has been, you could describe it as Belichickian. And don't you think if Bill Belichick was still calling the shots, the meme of a stick prodding the Elvis logo saying, hey, wake up, do something. And said the Danielses of the world, the Andrew Callahans of the world, the low-level media are leading the charge saying it's refreshing because they've been bought off with Papagenos and warm Bud Light. It's so predictable. It's laughable at this point.
Mostly all of the players that the Patriots have signed over the last 2 days or so are all Belichick, either all Belichick picks or something that he would have made, which is hilarious to me. And of course, don't forget all about the coaches that are there. You know, Dante Hightower is now a coach, Gerard Mayo, of course. And again, all of these Belichick disciples, it's Belichick, but nicer. That's what this entire organization is. And going back to what Pass and what John said about, you know, getting over it, I'm not in that acceptance stage. I'm still in rage stage. I'm in the mode where I just cannot stand the way it happened. And it was, and I know a lot of people are going to say, well, it wasn't supposed to happen with Brady either. Do your research. He left. Deal with it. But Belichick didn't leave. He was fired. And the way it happened with the press conference and now with this documentary, it's just incensed me in a way that I don't think I've ever felt about anything. And I, like Pat said, especially living in a different market, I'm, you know, as big a fan as you can think of, but I've totally disconnected myself from the team. Like, I unfollowed all the social media. I have no idea, you know, even though I've been, because I have the timeline, because I follow a lot of people who are still fans, I follow a lot. And that's how I've been able to get the news. But other than that, I've been totally disconnected. And I don't think I'm, like Pat said, I don't think I'm going to be following the draft. I don't think I'm going to be doing anything of that nature because it's Belichick, but nicer. And I don't want that. I want the real thing, baby. And I can't get that. And it just incenses me because I guarantee you with the players that they have now, and I'm sure they're going to add, you know, over the course of the summer, they're going to have players enter the game. But if he was still there, this is a playoff team or contending playoff team right now. And because he's not there, I just can't. I don't know the direction, except again, it's being nice to the media. It's you know, and also it's erasing everything that the last 20 years has meant. And I know we're not alone. And by looking at, you know, I know X is a cesspool in and of itself, but I know looking at the Patriots, the mentions, and looking at, you know, a lot of media people's mentions as well, a lot of people are sick of it as well. So I don't think that we're alone in this. You know, we like to think that we're the baddies, but I think there are a lot of people who are feeling just the same way as we do, and they don't like it.
Shaq, let me come back to you in this. Sorry to cut you off, John. I want to come back to Shaq on this. One more point on the dynasty that I promised myself I had to make, and I'm going to do that now. The Aaron Hernandez, the depiction of everything having to do with Aaron Hernandez in that documentary, and I'm going to quote our buddy Carmine Tazzi from Twitter. I'm going to quote verbatim from a tweet he had on March 5th, and I feel this encapsulates how I feel very well. Tazzi says, quote, laying Aaron Hernandez at the feet of Belichick during a Kraft Productions documentary is so low that I don't even think John Henry would do it. I'm done with this team until the Krafts and his bastard child he's hiding in California sell that franchise. Now, Mike on Route One, our buddy in this town, rightfully points out, in my opinion, the lack of intellectual curiosity among the Patriots media, always taking the path of least resistance. Bob Kraft says in that in the episode of the documentary that, quote, Aaron Hernandez is a good guy, and he must have had a good reason to murder that individual. Who's following up on this? You know, Jonathan's still attending to the lids falling off the cardboard boxes. Who in the Patriots media is asking these questions? The answer is none of them are. So, Shaq, the Aaron Hernandez portion of the documentary, you know, if you don't think that this is slanted, and Hamacek has been adamant that he doesn't have editorial control, or that Kraft doesn't have editorial control over the documentary, you don't have to have it on paper in writing for it to be implied. And for that to insinuate that's otherwise is, you know, you're a liar if you insinuate otherwise. Go ahead. What do you think, Shaq?
This to me is, you know, and then there, then I saw some people saying that Aaron Hernandez would have been okay if Belichick traded him. So you're going on for like, what, 30 minutes about how mentally disturbed deeply that he was and how prone to violence that he was. And then a trade is going to magically snap, Thanos snap all of that away. Come on, man. You in Seattle, you probably have a body, and Belichick would still take the blame for that. It's unbelievable. Dr. Phil would have fixed him as well. I guess that's what we were expecting. It's sickening how this has been made to, and now there are people out there who believe because of this documentary that Bill Belichick is the reason why Aaron Hernandez killed Owen Lloyd.
As I've mentioned before, Ron Borges is on record as saying that Belichick suggested that Hernandez get a flop house.
it's crazy. And now, and I was just thinking about this, and I don't know what you guys think about this. And actually, I was thinking about this a week ago, but now after this documentary, it really crawls on my skin. You know, they're going to have that Brady Hall of Fame thing on 6/12/24, right? June 12/24. I don't think Bill Belichick is going to be there. And number two, he shouldn't, in my opinion. And I don't think that he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. And to be honest, he shouldn't, because it's been sullied. Everything the last 2 months has been erased. And it's because of crap that has happened. And that might be strong, but I seriously feel that all those six championships that are in one Patriot place right now, those six Lombardi trophies are partially because of him. And the fact that that Kraft doesn't know, and all of these people don't seem to want to care about it. I think that I hope that Bill Belichick comes back and says something about this, and whoever media arm he has to. But I'm just so mad, as you can tell.
I hope the longer Belichick stays quiet in this, I think the better he looks. Pass, once you wrap up the documentary, how are you looking at it? Has it affected? Did you get one of the ownership questionnaire packets. Did you fill one out for your season tickets?
Well, they're actually my buddy's name, so no, he probably filled it out. But I do have a point on that Aaron Hernandez episode, though. There is a scene, which not surprisingly, this did not get a lot of, you know, the press, in which it looks like they're at training camp and Bill and Kraft are talking. And, you know, Kraft is saying, you alluded to this, but I'm not sure this is the exact scene you were talking about. But, you know, Kraft said, I think he's got a good heart. He seems like a good guy. I really like him. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially, and Bill just kind of doesn't say a word. He's twirling his whistle, just kind of like, almost has a smirk on his face. And, you know, so if Bill is supposedly the naive one who tolerated Hernandez, it was really Bob, you could see in that scene, who he's the one who re-signed him and gave him a kiss on the cheek every time, and fell for him hook, line, and sinker. And it's that scene, I think, that, you know, if you're going to paint it, you know, the Patriots is overlooking a guy's faults, I think that scene shows it was really Bob who was doing so, not Bill. You know, he wasn't agreeing with anything Bob said in that scene anyways.
John, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to disagree with myself from a moment ago. The urge to kill is rising when I think about the way that they covered the Hernandez thing. It is absolutely reprehensible. And the way Tazzy put it, I couldn't say it any better myself. You know, it's to the earlier point about your fandom, you know, my fandom has definitely gone sour for this team. And, you know, the worst thing that can happen, you know, this was a Honks and Bobos pod throughout the Brady and Belichick 100%. Era, right?
Proudly, I mean,
proudly footy pajama wearing Honk and Bobo pod, right? I will say just for myself, it's always been a fundamental belief in Bill Belichick and the culture and the organization and, you know, finding a way to get it done and do your job and all these things that I just have the utmost respect for. So I think we went from that to this kind of anger around the way he was fired. That anger for me has been intensified, you know, significantly based on the documentary. But then, like, where does it go from here? Can I remain angry, or do I become indifferent? And I think that's where I'm going. And the worst
the opposite
thing
of love
happen,
isn't hate.
Exactly. The worst thing that can happen to a pro sports franchise and the worst thing that can happen to sports radio is you're indifferent, right? They feed off your anger. They feed off your interest. And to lose interest in the team is the end, right? It's not to be angry about it. It's not to be rooting against the Krafts and, you know, Jonathan Kraft and his erstwhile ownership. It's to just not really give a shit. And that's, I think I want to get to that place. You know, everything ends badly. Otherwise it wouldn't end. It ended badly. And, like, you know, what do? You move on. And thinking back to Dad in 1967, in 1969, when they fired Dick Williams for the great communicator, Eddie Casco, right? What do we got? History repeating itself with the great collaborator, Gerard Mayo, right? It's the exact same thing.
It's exactly. And you can hit the bell now because we just made the obligatory Dick Williams, Eddie Casco reference on this week's Entitled Town. Scartzy, I know you're not caught up yet.
Center square on the bingo card.
That's right. That's it, playing Entitled Town bingo. Scartzy, I actually laughed out loud during the Aaron Hernandez portion of the Kraft hagiography, who appears on my screen, but Bob Holler, hit piece extraordinaire. God. I mean, it is absolutely a parody at this point. Bob Holler could not find anything. It went astray in the Iroquois John Henry shot, but he's there. He's there at Foxborough sniffing for crumbs all the time and more than willing to line up against Bill Belichick.
And it was a shame that they couldn't find any war criminals in Bill's background during that that investigation that went nowhere. Oh yeah, it was Bill and house dressed Jackie McMullen. They were very famous back in the day for the what was it, the Saturday before the Super Bowl hit piece that would come out, or was it Friday or Saturday?
Yeah. I think it was the second Giants Super Bowl.
We're obviously just focusing on the negative because there's so much, but there must have been some decent people that they could have brought in. Welker didn't Welker didn't do much for himself.
He's not covering himself in glory. His bitterness comes through. He feels like he was screwed. I get it.
Yeah.
Way to compete.
Way to compete, Welker. That's Wally Pip Welker. And Julian Edelman is, anyway.
Yeah, let's not forget that this was real from Bob Holler. Death and distress haunt the 2001 Patriots team that kicked off the dynasty.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's not slanted. It's not slanted even a little bit. I feel obligated to include on the good side. I can't believe Ernie Adams, God bless his heart, Ernie Adams sat down in front of the cameras for this, even recreated his drive to the snow game against the Raiders in January of 2002. But Ernie Adams, I think speaking by proxy for Bill Belichick, shares our contempt and disdain for the Patriots media.
The media is the group that I call the scribes. It's just a lot of people who don't have a clue what they're talking about, frankly. But there are some experts in New England on football, and they all work in the coaching staff for the Patriots.
You're telling me it's not Tony Maserati? It's not the cat fucker, Shaq? I shouldn't believe what they're saying? Come on.
Yeah, it's not the bald-headed guy who tells you that, you know, he wants your kids to die. No, it's not that guy either.
Pass, do you consume any, you're still living in the Boston area, do you consume much sports radio?
None. I used to, and I can't say none. Once in a great while, if so.
You get in the car in the morning after the Celtics game was on from the night before?
Yeah, that's happened, but generally not at all. Honestly, I used to, and I don't know, probably 10, 15 years ago, I switched to just strictly music, and I think it's made my life happier, to be honest. In fact, it got to the point where, you know, recently I've been on Twitter a lot, but if you went back, I wasn't really on Twitter much until the last few months. And people would say things to me, you know, some of these fake scandals that would be going around, you know, like, did you hear, Mac and Belichick are at each other's throat, whatever it was. And I wouldn't even know what they were talking. I would be like, well, what are you talking about? I still follow the team, but I pretty much stuck to real news, you know, transactions and watching the games. And so, no, I don't listen to any of it at all anymore. And I recommend that for everybody, to be honest.
It's our slogan is turn off your radios.
Right. You've been saying that since the old days.
That's true. We got an email to our email account, entitledtown@gmail.com. John, I'm going to throw it to you. Quote, the Venn diagram of the journalists that saw the entire doc before it was released and those that were the mouthpiece for the craft seasons would be very interesting. Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was, it's actually, I want to go to kind of riff off that a little bit. And hit on something that we've touched on a little bit in the past, but it just every week it just kind of manifests itself, you know, even further. And that is the folks that had no access and no scoops and no nothing for years and years and years are now suddenly, you know, wired in that building. And I just find it to be
welcome guests that got the apology at the Mayo happy hour.
Absolutely. And the Papagenos and the Bud Light, as you love to say. And you know, it's I made a crack on Twitter earlier about mass live bloggers having to rework their 2020 Patriots draft takes because suddenly, you know, that draft is looking pretty damn epic with Duggar getting the transition tag and now Uche gets extended and Onwenu gets extended and Jennings just had the best year of his career last year. So, you know, what they do with him. I mean, it's like suddenly you've got three guys getting extended from that draft, which not having done the math, I assume would be in the upper half of results among NBA, NFL teams in drafts going back to 2020. So, you know, the mediates here with the way they are almost euphoric in the coverage and the attention they're now getting that they haven't gotten, you know, in some of their entire professional careers, I'm sure they don't know how to handle it. I mean, they must be like pigs in slop, just gobbling up everything that is coming from that building. But once the losses start And once the finger pointing starts, that's when it's going to get interesting, right? It's easy to talk about the draft and who looks good. And boy, we're sure excited about so-and-so and extending so-and-so. But once the finger pointing begins, there's plenty of people who are on that staff. What is it? The, you know, 19 of them or so on the coaching staff, they're going to absolutely be pointing fingers at one another and assigning blame. Front office is, you know, all about collaboration. There's no single decision maker, it seems. And it, if they start losing, it'll be pretty chaotic pretty quickly. And then the media, I think, will really have a field day, although it might cost them a few warm Bud Lights.
Scartsy, I'd love to think that Jonathan Kraft is that beautiful picture of Jonathan Kraft on his flip phone. I like to think he's calling Mark Daniels and going, Blue Horseshoe loves Calvin Ridley. 2-year deal on the table.
Well, that could definitely be happening. He could be, you know, he could be calling, you know, the welcomed back into the building, Albert Breer. I take personal offense that he's allowed back in the building. He is a tremendous waste of space. And just the waves of uselessness that radiate off him.
Scartelli led me down the primrose path to this. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I cut you off.
Take it.
Go, Scartsy.
Oh, no.
Go, Mike. You know it, Mike.
All right. Albert Breer, in a universe of completely useless pustules, Albert Breer sinks below all the others, including Chad Graff, including Mike Cadlick, including the completely and utterly despicable Andy Hart. On Monday, Andy, when I think incompetence, my thoughts gravitate towards Andy Hart and also things that are low to the ground. But Albert Breer on Monday tweeted that Mac Jones was not considered a first round talent.
So the more coaches that I've talked to that have worked with him, he's just not a first round talent. And the biggest problem for Mac was that he went in the first round. This happens with a lot of guys is a guy goes in the first round, he's overdrafted, the expectations are too high, and it winds up becoming complicated because of that. He was never a first round talent. And that is the baseline here. He played in a great system on a great team in great circumstances at Alabama. He had really good circumstances his rookie year. He was heavily managed. But the reason why there wasn't even a 4 out there for him, and the reason why he'll go for less than Justin Fields will go for, even though Justin Fields hasn't had a ton more success than he has, is because Justin Fields is a first round talent. Like, he has first round physical traits. And at the end of the day, for all of the other complicating factors, everything with the coaches and the changes and everything else, we just boiled down, they missed.
Okay, so break it down. Who do we blame for Mac Jones being traded yesterday after failing in New England? Do
Here's
we blame
the
player, or do we blame the team? And if you want to combine that, Belichick and the Patriots or Mac Jones, who gets more of that blame?
The team, because he was overdrafted.
Thank you.
Because he was overdrafted.
I don't think it's just about being overdrafted, though. But can't tell me that Mac Jones couldn't have performed better as Patriots quarterback than he did. He was capable of more than what he gave. He could have given them more, Bert. After that rookie year that they didn't get out of him because they didn't put him in a good position, and they should learn something as an organization. I know the coaching staff has now changed over.
Here's the root of the problem.
But they should learn from that experience.
Here's what you learn, though. You learn, do not mistake good for great.
Yet in the 2021, his mock draft, Albert Breer had Mac Jones going to the San Francisco 49ers with the 3rd pick overall in the first round. Is he disingenuous, or is he just stupid? Obviously, the answer is yes, John. But, I mean, he is impossibly vapid. He has fallen up his whole life. He is every time he opens his mouth, property values in the Lincoln Sudbury School District should plummet.
I will say he is the media that Jonathan Kraft deserves.
Yes, yes.
And Zolak.
Yeah.
Just as long as you're throwing around Jonathan favorites. How do you go from Gill and Gino to Zolak?
Yeah. Poor Bob Soci. My heart goes out to Bob Soci on a regular basis. He's got a grunting buffoon next to him. Brian Scalabrine sound like a Harvard, someone who went to the Harvard School of Divinity. Go ahead, Shaq.
What happened to that fireworks thing that Scott Zolak alluded to on X the other
Nothing
day?
Nothing to see here. Tuesday. Please disperse.
Good question.
Snakes and sparklers are fireworks.
It sounded adjacent to Full Throttle to me, uncomfortably so.
I want to say that's not the first time.
Fireworks is signing Antonio Gibson? Is that what that is?
I don't think that's the first time Zolak's done that either. Said, "Oh, you know, big moves coming, then nothing happens." I'm pretty sure he's done that on several occasions.
I mean, literally, the big
Blue Horseshoe Jonathan has given Zoe his tips.
The much lampooned, much maligned 2020 Patriots draft. The big news, the big fireworks, are basically extending a bunch of those guys. Here you go. That's where we're at.
Yeah, true.
And these guys are going to be coached by the vaunted Van Peltadew duo. And a head coach who's never called plays on either side of the ball, Ben McAdoo and Alex Van Pelt. How is that not fodder for comedy? Ben McAdoo and Alex Van Pelt, they look like perfect strangers on a network that's far, far, far less than our good friends at Pluto TV, Scartsy.
But it was.
Did I throw you off with the Pluto TV reference? I'm sorry.
My good friend Pluto TV, how dare you? But anyways, but it's not like they had a defensive guy running offensive plays.
Yeah, that's true.
He was mean to them. Mm-hmm. He thought that he could be like Bill, and he can't be like Bill because, well, he's not. But it's amazing. More Belichick retreads are being brought in. It's our old pal Jacoby.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And why don't we just get the mallet out and whack ourselves in the nuts? How many? not the Ryan mallet because he's unavailable as we know.
Too soon.
But anyways, how many games would the Patriots have won with Jacoby last year?
Yeah. 8-9. Here we come.
I'd have accepted Baker Mayfield. I don't think that would have saved Bill's job. I think they would have gotten rid of him at 8-9. The pieces were moving around the cameras.
Like we were saying earlier, they sat all these assholes down in front of the cameras before last season. The thumb was on the scale for Belichick, and he was a dead man walking the entire fucking year. You don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows, and Bill Belichick is no idiot.
Oh, yeah.
Robert was
running his mouth as usual at the meetings. In 23, we have to make the playoffs this year.
Right. He said that, I think, way back in like 2021. They had missed the playoffs 1 year, and he said, we better start winning again. Is there a Kraft quote where he says, when are you gonna get rid of Bill? The first time he goes 8-8?
Yes.
I guess he waited until the third time he went 8-8, but that's only because he won six Super Bowls. If he'd only won three, he probably would have done it the first time he went 8-8.
Well, if you
watch the documentary, you think it's only four. So who knows?
Yeah, that's true.
That's very true.
That's it. They cover the ones coming up.
I want to hit on a couple of quick things before I pass. I want to do a lightning round with you, where I can ask a couple of questions here or there, and you tell us what you think. But before we do that, John, Nick Cattles only got 4 hours of sleep last night.
Mm. Yeah, we talked about this too.
I salute you.
was it studying geography?
I know you put the Purple Heart up for him on that one. But, this is file under Team Mom. I'll embrace my Team Mom role here, Pass, if you've heard this before. I'm the big softy on the pod. Having had the benefit of great mentors, think about, there but for the grace of God, Greg Bedard is your mentor. Are you really going to judge this young man? Are you really going to judge him?
You're going to become Aaron Hernandez if Greg Bedard is his mentor.
Exactly. And don't make me drop a John Boyd Malvo reference on this pod, because I will not do it. This is a tragedy. We are witnessing in real time, and the young man needs help. He needs better mentors. He needs to escape the tractor beam of Greg Bedard and go off and kind of reestablish himself. That's my advice. He ought to go to a place like Sacramento. That would be my advice.
Go be with someone more successful like Karen Garrigan.
Yeah. Get out of Boston and you'll get away from the worst people in the world in the sports.
But if I give to his, if I give to his Patreon, will that mean I don't have to hear, I don't have to see his tweets anymore? Because I don't know.
People are, he's asking for that Patreon because he gave all his money to the Nigerian prince. Don't you remember that?
Okay, that's right.
Yeah.
Pass, you alluded to it quickly, but Cerrone Battle, who is desperately seeking Michael Felger's approval on 98.5, he lives in North Carolina, and he's throwing out towns in Massachusetts. He somehow thinks that someone who plays for the Patriots is going to live in Lynn, Massachusetts. And he actually looked at Google Maps today and said, ooh, Attleboro looks like it's close to Gillette Stadium. I'll use that. Pretty embarrassing. Kind of representative of what those 98.5 Bobos are. Rest in peace, Mark Dondero's integrity.
Yeah, I mean, when you're hiring guys from North Carolina, that's what you're going to get. Well, where did he come from? What's his connection to the Patriots?
Hey, evidently, he's a Boston native, but he lives in the North Carolina now.
I don't even think I follow him on Twitter, but mostly I just keep ripping him.
Scartzy, do you think when Clark Hunt commissions the Dynasty Kansas City Chiefs version that he will have Andy Reid sit down and talk about Britt Reid and his near vehicular homicide and his son's drinking and driving and the death of his two sons? Do you think that'll be addressed the way Kraft made, or I should say, not Kraft, but Matthew Hamachek made Belichick relive all of his low moments? Do you think that Hamachek will make Belichick relive Tits McGee leaving him or their breakup too? What do you think?
Oh, well, why not? You know, it's something that it's something people are interested in. I mean, otherwise, otherwise it wouldn't be brought up. But yeah, though, that just despicable move by the governor out there in Missouri.
Yes,
that's it's beneath contempt. It just shows that you know, there's two systems of justice, and that shouldn't be the case. But what could be more obvious?
Very true. Very true. Yeah. Britt Reid's sentence was commuted by the governor of Missouri. By the way, the governor of Missouri also has a Kansas City Chiefs tattoo on the back. So God, unit, country, honor, core. And I know I'm fucking that up from A Few Good Men, but it's a Chiefs kingdom and then jurisprudence after that. So all hail Chiefs kingdom. Pass got some old school. We used to do a rapid fire segment. I am curious, are you ready to answer a few questions?
I will give it a shot.
All right. What's your favorite non-Super Bowl win of the Belichick-Brady era?
My favorite? You know, this is probably a surprising one, but the last game of the last regular season game, which I believe was a Saturday against the Dolphins, where Brady caught a pass, I really enjoyed that game. I think at the end, I don't think they knew if they'd had a home game or not yet. So at the end, they all ran around and congratulated the fans. That was a really good win. I don't know why it sticks out in my mind, but just a great day. You know, just an unexpected playoff appearance. Actually, I don't believe it was the last game of the year. It was the last home game. They played the rescheduled Carolina game the week after that and won the division. From 9/11, but I'll go with that one, believe it or not.
That's a good one as any. Best running back of the Belichick era?
It's got to be Corey Dillon that one year, right?
I would give Antoine. Antoine was a closer. He was an Eckersley-like closer in 2001. And LeGarrette Blount, stupidly underrated.
Yeah, true. I mean, and then if you want to throw in like pass catching like Kevin Falk or James White, you know, but
you read my mind. The next question is best patch catching back of the Belichick era.
Okay, it's definitely between those two. I'm going to go with Falk, slightly. Vereen was good too as a third guy.
Yeah, Vereen was the lead pass catching back on the champs in 49.
Didn't he have 14 catches in the Super Bowl?
He had the record at one point. He did have the record until I think Edelman and then Cooper Kupp broke Edelman's record, and it might have been broken this year. I can't remember, by Travis Kelce, but I can't remember if that's the case or not. What was the best defense of the Belichick era?
2003. When you look at the playoffs and shutting down the Colts.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you know, on the other hand, they kind of got lit up in the Super Bowl. But you know, that wasn't a great offense they had that year. You know, they didn't have Dylan yet. Smith didn't have as good a year as he did the previous years. You know, Brady.
Do you know who led the team in rushing touchdowns in 2003?
In 2003, Falk? I'm not sure.
Mike Cloud.
Mike Cloud, yeah.
Oh, my God.
One game where you had a big game against, who was it, the Titans?
Yep. Cloud was solid, even though he's a BC grad. I got to give him his props. Sorry, McNulty. Non-Super Bowl 42 division. Change, if you could change the result of one game in the Belichick-Brady era, which game would you flip?
Probably that, the Eagles Super Bowl loss.
Mm-hmm. 52.
Yes.
Yeah, it's either 52 for me or the 2006 AFC Championship against the Colts. That one hurt.
It's, well, that's the one for me.
Figures, you know, that year, 2006. And they had, you know, what did they lead in that game? Like 24-3.
After Samuel's pick, I believe it was 21-3, his pick six.
It would have crushed the Bears in that game, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, there are eight teams in the AFC that could have.
Yeah. I remember John making the point to me after Jake Plummer beat them in the Ben Watson game in 2005. January 2006, remember you complaining to me, is that why are these shit bums like Jake Delhomme and Jake Plummer that can light up these team and win and beat them in the playoffs, and he can shut down Peyton Manning and guys of that ilk.
And later on, it was Nick Foles, right? It's just the way it, and Eli Manning. I mean, not that Manning did a lot, but yeah, it's just weird. It's just sports.
Nick Foles is Vinny Johnson. That's all.
It's what makes it so great.
Pass, you following the Celtics at all?
Yeah. Yes, I was Celtics fan.
You know, it's negativity of the media. I don't know if you know who Mark Dondero is. He's a former low-level EEI guy. He's been on the podcast. He was great on the podcast with us. But this team is on pace to win 62, 63, 64 games. And the rampant negativity in the Boston media, the shitting on Tatum. I swear to God, these guys, you know, they release in their pants when Tatum misses, you know, a potentially game-changing shot. Like the Rictator says, all the negativity in the town sucks. But I mean, they're the team that's closest to a championship in town. Is it the typical Boston radio negativity that you're feeling, even though you're not listening?
Yeah, well, you know, when it comes to Tatum, I don't think it's just the media too. I see a lot of fans rip the guy too. You know, I mean, he's one of the best players we've had in any sport here in quite a while, and I see even fans saying, you know, he's, you know, he doesn't come up big in the big games, or, you know, all kinds of just ridiculous commentary. You should just appreciate the guy. He doesn't have a great game every night. You know, like last night, I saw someone today ripping him, Tatum did nothing. They won by 20 and he had 22 points or something. You know,
they had 22, 6, and 8, and they won by 22 on the road.
Right. Without Holiday, you know?
Let me jump in, Mike, on that, because you and I talked just a little bit about this. He makes it look so easy, and he moves with such like elegance and grace that
little bit of Julius Erving in his game, John. Little bit, and he can overpower guys too.
You know, I think of like a guy like a Mario Lemieux, right, or maybe even like going back to like a Guy Lafleur, where it was like they just move at like a kind of a different speed with a different sort of artistry, you know, and like casual, like non-athletes like me, right? Like if I were a Tatum antagonist, it would be, well, he's so gifted, he should expend more energy, because it's like, for me, it's a lot of huffing and puffing, right? Like, why isn't he huffing and puffing? He's clearly not working hard. And it's just like, he's got this, like, he's so gifted and so smooth and talented that I just don't think he's relatable. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's hard for people to relate. They think he should be even greater when he's already sublimely great.
I mean, top five MVP pick, you know, he's definitely the top five conversation or so.
Has to be. He's not going to win the MVP.
Can't be lower than two, in my opinion.
Okay.
I feel like I feel like the media wants to put Jason Tatum as this Kobe Bryant-ish ball hog, and they want to put him like his shoe, how comment on how his shooting's gone down, but they fail to see that this entire team has shooters and playmakers. So people can't stand, like Coach Meerkat said, people can't stand to see him in a different role. So
he's stepped into a leadership role. It's on record that before the season he took Porzingis and Horford and the other members of the starting five, and listen, guys, you know, we all have to sacrifice if we're going to win. Mm-hmm. And the season's three quarters of the way over, but it's been a hell of a ride. They lost a really close game on the road at Denver against that Denver team
Denver's really, really good. I think Denver's a team that could beat them. I mean, because Denver's just, you know, they got the experience last year, and they're great. I think they're just like cruising through the regular season. They got a good record, but not, you know, not the best of the West. But Denver's, in my opinion, the only team that's really comparable to the Celtics, in my opinion.
They just don't hand you the rings. You got to earn them. Right, Denver earned them last year. And thank God they beat Miami, because I could not have taken Jimmy Butler, world champion. That narrative would have sent me over the edge.
Heat culture?
Heat culture. Oh. That's what I was gonna say. Heat culture.
By the way, when the Celtics went down there and they beat them, when they had the Heat culture court and the Heat culture uniforms, and they went and beat them by 20+, that was a good night in the Irons household. Pass. It was fun. Thank you for coming on with us. It's always nice to know that like-minded people existed. Again, we've been quote-unquote friends for 20 years, so thanks for coming on. And I do have to say, I want to thank John, because this is the only podcast in the history of podcasts that have referenced Guy LaFleur and Eddie Casco within a 25-minute frame. Gentlemen, thank you all. Shaq is at Atomic Dog 5150. Brother John is at That John Irons. Scartelli is the purveyor of the sports junk drawer. He is at the15net.com and at Pat Scartell. Our good friend Pat is at Pass is at Patrick Pass 35 on the Twitter. My name is Mike Irons. Once again, thank you for listening to Entitled Town. This was fun, gentlemen. I hope we can do it again. Again, thank you for everything. Guys, the offseason continues. Gerard and Thunder are going to try to burn some cash. And I'm going to remind you to please turn off your radio.
And we're going to stay positive all the way through. And if you think I'm going to succumb to negativity, you're wrong. You got the wrong guy leading this basketball team.